¿En serio? Aún estás a tiempo. Llama e infórmate sobre los cursos intensivos en grupos reducidos. Sí, sí, porque puedes venir con un amigo, con un familiar. Cursos intensivos en grupos reducidos. Infórmate en el teléfono del inglés en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Baugan, estamos celebrando la Semana del Inglés. Siempre hemos querido darte lo mejor de lo mejor para que aprendas inglés disfrutando. Pero es que ahora te lo queremos dar gratis. Gratis.
Hemos preparado un montón de sorpresas, descuentazos, concursos con premios increíbles, talleres gratuitos con tus locutores y autores favoritos y muchas más cosas.
Por eso, durante toda esta semana vamos a sortear cursos y materiales Baugan valorados en casi 2.000 euros. ¿Qué es lo que tienes que hacer? Muy sencillo.
Entra en grupobaugan.com y descúbrelo. Los cursos trimestrales te ofrecen este programa.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to
Hello is a show with no name.
That's right, amigos. It's the show with no name 2.0 on Vaughn Radio. And we're here with your favorite DJ in the whole wide world.
Macho Man.
That's right, amigos. As always, having a great time here. We're looking at today's double trouble on the show, and I see so many amigos participating. Let's see, the first person to nail it today. It was a tough one, huh? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Houses. Tough one. Joaquin Lázaro says the expression al pie de la letra. I think that's the way to say it in Spanish. Joaquin Lázaro, al pie de la letra. The one we're looking for on the app. He does everything, the book. Pero prefiero explicártelo en inglés que decir al pie de la letra. I'm trying to, because the easy way is to say al pie de la letra. But what's up? Well, I'll tell you something. It's better to explain it. And I want you guys to explain it, too, of course. All right, so this was a tough one, and I got this one off a Netflix documentary called Dirty Money. Now, it's awesome. If you have not seen it, it's freaking awesome. Dirty Money. All right, so ¿vas a mañar o maquillar las cuentas? Are you going to... Now, you know how we say this in English? This is great because it rhymes. Are you going to cook the books? Now, to cook, cocinar los libros. Now, they're talking about the accounting books. Los libros de contabilidad. When they talk about the books, right? So one way we say that in English, it's a funny little way of saying it. When a company falsifies their numbers, they're cooking the books. To cook the books. All right? So, ¿vas a mañar o maquillar las cuentas? Va a mañar o maquillar las cuentas en tercera persona. Is he going to cook the books? And then the second part, eso es el truco más viejo del mundo. Now, in English, we don't say it's the oldest trick in the world. It would be you. People would understand you if you said it's the oldest trick in the world. But we have another way to express that. And we say it's the oldest trick in the book. O sea, que hay un libro de trucos y chistes y tal. And it's the oldest one in the book. O sea, todo el mundo se lo sabe. Right? So the word we're doubling up on here is book. And there's a reason I did that, guys. Well, several reasons. Today is San Jordi. Happy San Jordi to all of you. It's World Book Day. It's UN English Language Day. And at 7:30, I'll be doing the English on the Go workshop here at Calle Orense 69. So tons of reasons to look at books today and expressions with books. Well, that and because I love to read, and I know you guys love to read as well. So there it is. Today's double trouble. ¿Va a amañar o maquillar las cuentas? Pregunta. Eso es el truco más viejo del mundo. Is he going to cook the books? Shh. That's the oldest trick in the book. All right. The oldest trick in the book, we say in English. All right. Great job. A lot of our listeners got it right. A nice round of applause to everybody, Nacho. Even those of you who didn't get it right. Hey, I applaud you for playing along, for practicing with us, for having fun, right? Okay, so I think, Nacho, we can also solve our challenge here on the app since it has to do with books as well. And the correct answer was he does everything by the book. By, B-Y was the preposition we were looking for. Do you do everything by the book? Do you stick to the script or are you a rebel, right? To do everything by the book is the expression. You say al pie de la letra, but it means to do everything as you're supposed to do it, right? And let's see, Nacho, not bad. Okay, it's tough to beat 91%, but I think this is really, really admirable. 86%. 86%. Of the listeners got it right. Excellent job, my amigos. I'm really, really impressed by how well you've all done today. As I said, on the listening exercise, double trouble, name that lyric. And, well, we don't have time for too many more challenges. In fact, in about 2 or 3 minutes, we've got to get moving because, well, we're going to air that fascinating interview, spellbinding. This is another way to say fascinante, que te pone un hechizo, no? It's a spellbinding interview with a really fascinating guy named Paul Brown. And so that's going to air just in a few moments. I want you guys to tune in, listen, see how much you understand. Again, Paul is a native speaker speaking to another native speaker. So you're going to hear natural English. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And a little background. As I said, Paul has been in the business for over 30 years. He spoke here in Madrid. He spoke here in Madrid last week at the Instituto Internacional, the American Space. And well, thanks to our friends at the embassy and at the American Space and Instituto Internacional, the New York Film Academy, and so many people who made it possible. Well, again, a lot of you guys missed the workshop. I was there. El tuvo un taller. It was excellent. In fact, I'll give you one thing that stood out. There's so much that stood out, destacó, from Paul's 2-hour lecture. And, one of the parts that stood out is he said, because he's in Hollywood. And he said, you know, I see a lot of people who are out there and they want to see what they can get, right? I want to be famous. I want to get an agent. I want to get a movie. They're always trying to see what they can get. And what he said basically was that a true artist is not looking to get. They're looking to give. A true artist is a giver. And any great artist in the world has given of themselves in their work, right? It's not, you know, when you're seeing something that's just, as he said, when it's truth, and you know when it's truth, whatever that truth may be, but that person is telling the truth in their story. And he talked about El Lado Bueno de las Cosas, the Silver Linings Playbook, great, fantastic movie. And he talked about why it was such a great movie and why it was written so well. And you know why? It was because the guy who wrote it, well, his son suffered from similar problems. So for him, it was personal. The guy wasn't like, I'm going to write a script and make a lot of money. He said, no, I'm going to tell my story. People need to hear this story. And well, if you think that's fascinating, well, he's going to share a lot of great things with us now. So guys, without any further ado, sin más, I'm going to leave you with my interview with Hollywood heavyweight, como se dice, peso pesado. And it's Paul Brown. So guys, enjoy.
Un inglés de cine. Hoy en el programa conoceremos a Paul Brown, guionista, productor, escritor de Hollywood. Ha trabajado en Star Trek, Expediente X y un largo etcétera. Hoy en el programa tenemos un invitado de cine. Con todos vosotros, Paul Brown.
Hey, hello, everybody. We are live at the American Space, and the American Space is definitely an amazing space. If you haven't checked it out, you should. They have a lot of cultural events, a lot of educational programs, and it's really a wonderful place. So today we're here at the American Space with a fellow American, Paul Brown, and well, he's an award-winning, nominated as well for Primetime Emmys, writer, director, actor, producer, yeah. I mean, a little bit of everything. You're probably familiar with a lot of his work. He's worked on X-Files, which you all know X-Files. Even here in Spain, that's a big one. It's a popular one. Also, Star Trek Voyager and many, many other ones that you'd recognize. One of my favorite projects of his, I was a skater in the 80s. And so I know you know which one I'm going to say. Well, yeah. First of all, welcome, Paul.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. You're talking about a film called Thrashin', skateboard movie.
Thrashin', because you guys remember the magazine Thrasher. Well, that was a big word. Skateboarding was just getting popular, and well, it's a classic cult movie, Thrashin'.
Yeah. I think people that, it's one of those things where if you were part of that world,
yeah,
it's a great memory. You might go back and look at it and say, it's not as good as I thought it was back then, but it doesn't matter because it was just sort of capturing a phenomenon.
Yeah, it was new.
And it had Tony Hawk and the best skaters in the world are in that movie. So.
And this is before skating was what it is now. Now it's a multi-million dollar industry, video games, everything. But it was still on the fringe at that. I remember, you know, you were a poser. That's where the word poser I remember came from. Yeah. People would come in dressed in skater gear and they never touched a skateboard in their lives. So now you wear a lot of hats, obviously. You're producing, directing, writing. What's your favorite hat to wear? What's the one where you feel like you're just in the zone?
Being the writer director. When you wrote it, now you've cast it, and now you're shooting it, and you're bringing it to life.
Right.
So working with actors and seeing what they do with it, how they can change it, that to me is the most exciting thing.
Just seeing that whole idea become, you know, materialized.
You're working with them. Mm-hmm. You're giving them notes, and they're seeing what they're giving you.
Right.
And together, you take it to another level.
Right, right. So that those words on the page come to life.
Exactly,
And that's the exciting part.
Yeah, watching actors. I mean, sometimes when you work with great actors, they're actually showing you what you wrote.
Right.
So they're discovering things, and then you're giving them ideas, and it's just amazing. That alchemy of creating something brand new.
Right, right. And I imagine some surprising moments come out that maybe weren't scripted. We're like, we're keeping that.
Yeah, I take total credit.
You're like, I'm the writer still, but.
No. That's what you pray for, happy accidents, or you pray for some interpretation or some way of saying a line completely surprising, and it brings it to a whole new level. So that's, you know, the thing that's important. I always encourage people, even right now with your iPhone, you know, write something that you care about,
right?
And then start making it. And you learn so much. You'll make mistakes. You'll learn from those. You'll find happy accidents, which are great, mm-hmm. but you'll also discover things with the actor.
Sure, sure.
Or watch what they do.
Right. Exactly.
And from that, it becomes part of your life history. Mm-hmm. And if you'll be drawing on that the rest of your career, all those little moments, you'll log them away.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you're a very, you let the actors kind of give them a certain amount of freedom when
Absolutely.
You're working with them.
You
which not all directors are like that. Some are like, stick to the script. That's
yeah,
what we do here.
That's a mistake. Yeah.
Right.
That's a mistake. I mean, there's a very famous story, a man named Arthur Miller, who wrote a play called Death of a Salesman.
Sure, classic.
And, yeah, but so he won the Pulitzer Prize. He won the Tony Award for Best Play. Mm-hmm. And later in his career, like 60 years after winning, you know, those prizes, he was doing a revival of Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Right.
And so there's a character named Linda, and she's the wife of the main character, Willie Loman. Mm. And so she was written and she's been portrayed for many, many years as being this meek character.
Right.
So you have the best actresses on Broadway are all auditioning to play the role of Linda. Mm. And Arthur Miller is sitting there in the audience, or he's sitting watching the director. And, right. And so all these women are doing the character like it's this meek woman. Well, one actress had made a decision. She said that Willie Loman in his personal life is weak because mm-hmm. he's lost his power.
Well, just his name, Loman, right?
It was metaphor, yeah.
It was done on purpose.
But he was like a successful salesman, but he was always trying to please everybody.
Sure.
And so he's kind of lost his power. Mm-hmm. So there's an amazing moment where he's beginning to lose his mind. He's becoming delusional. And so she sees him, the role of Linda, she sees her husband in the backyard kind of hallucinating. And she says, Willie, Willie, the lines are, Willie, Willie, come to bed. Now, mm-hmm. it was always played as a meek woman
right, right.
begging her husband to come in. This one actress decided that Willie, in his professional life, was weak. But in the bedroom, she could make him feel like a man again. So rather than saying, Willie, Willie, come to bed, she's like, Willie, Willie, come to bed.
Yeah.
So it's much stronger.
Sure.
And
great
much,
choice.
Yeah, because she decided that in the text, she could make that true.
Right.
So Arthur,
she justified it. In
exactly. So it was so powerful and kind of erotic.
Right.
And she says that when Willie come to bed, she knows what that means. And Arthur Miller, who had written this incredible play, mm-hmm. one of the great plays of American theater, Arthur Miller was watching this and he went, oh my God, that's Linda.
Wow.
He saw,
after so many years.
After so many years.
So many interpretations.
That's Linda. So it's a great model for all actors and actresses that you come into a room. If I wrote the script, you show me what I wrote.
Right, right.
And I'll take credit for it.
Exactly.
No. I'll never say that joke again. The point is, you show me what I wrote and you get the job.
Right, right.
If you try and please me, you don't get the job.
Right, right. Taking the easy route. Well,
yeah.
Play her meek, which is what everybody did before that.
Yeah.
I mean, she said, I think there's something deeper in there.
Much deeper. So
yeah.
I tell students that story to encourage right. them to make choices because they say that there's a very famous acting teacher, Stella Adler,
sure.
the coach of Marlon Brando. Mm. She says your choices are your talent.
Right.
What, you know, that's where you get to take the material and make it your own.
Right.
And so for actors, you say, first of all, what you choose, you have to be able to justify it. Mm. So it's truthful.
Right.
Then you have to figure out what's going to make it be interesting. So you say, be original.
Mm.
And then finally, when you go to audition or you're doing a part, the audience doesn't exist.
Yeah.
When I'm doing a scene, you're the most important person as I am to you, right?
Right.
And so I'm putting all my attention on you, but I make choices that are daring.
Yeah.
When you're trying to get the part, you're weak because you're thinking about the director. And
right.
That's,
what if? What if I screw up?
They don't exist.
Right.
The only person is the person you're doing the scene. So
right, right.
Truthful, original, daring.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's easier said than done, but a lot of times not. You go and audition and you're so in your head about what if I don't do this that you're not really in the moment.
You're exactly. You're actually not being authentic because
right.
a real person is talking to somebody.
Right.
An actor's thinking about all these things that make them a bad actor.
Right, right. And you're not fooling the casting director who's like,
yeah.
this guy's totally disconnected from what he's doing.
Right.
It's almost cookie cutter.
Yeah. Or they know I'm trying to please them.
Right.
And they disconnect because now they're like, ugh.
Another one. He's got a lot of these people coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. So you have to set yourself apart from the rest as well by making these daring choices.
Exactly.
I think some of the great actors, you know, you look at them, you're like, who would say that like that?
Right.
Well, Al Pacino. And he took he went out on a limb and said, that's how I'm going to say that line.
Brando kept doing behavior like, this is so bizarre, but it's also interesting and truthful.
Right. And it was justified, as you said, which is another thing inside the world of the script.
Right.
And, great. And as well as, I don't know how you have time to come meet with us, directing, producing, writing, but you also lecture at the very reputable New York Film Academy in New York City, which, as I was telling you before, I have a wonderful, wonderful history there of working in some of my first projects, short films I ever worked on.
So were you
were
in
there.
New York or Los Angeles?
I was living in New York. Yeah.
Okay, great.
I lived in Chelsea. And when I was a starving artist, as they say, a young actor just getting out of school, I needed that experience.
Yeah.
And they were looking for actors for their short films. And
and we still are.
So there you go.
In Los Angeles or Florence
sure.
or New York, we're always looking to give actors a chance.
Right.
So everybody wins.
And maybe you'll discover the next Brando or who knows?
Well, I was teaching a workshop and we were in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Bogota, Colombia. And this one actor became part of the workshop. He had no money. Someone sponsored him to be in this workshop.
Right.
And so I do an exercise called Tell Me Something True, where I get them to think of something in their lives, someone they always wanted to say something to,
okay.
but they didn't have the courage or the chance to say it. I go, today you get to talk to that person.
Right.
So I give everyone half an hour to write their monologue.
Mm.
And so this young guy's 19 years old. He wrote a monologue to his grandfather.
Mm.
And I talk a lot about the idea you have to speak the forbidden.
Right.
Not what's socially acceptable.
The comfortable choice.
Yeah, we look for the moment of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this monologue to his grandfather. And it was how the grandfather had been cruel to him.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's parts he liked about the grandfather. So it was complex.
It wasn't just deeper than I hate you.
Yeah, it was both end.
Right.
And then how this person who had been judgmental also had been kind at times.
Mm-hmm.
So the monologue was one of the best monologues I've ever heard in my life.
Wow.
And people were just astonished.
You were blown away.
And he hasn't written much at all.
Right. He was just playing along.
He was just telling the truth.
Right.
So again, we're trying to get people to connect to what's true in them as well as their imagination, because this story has never happened.
Right.
He never told the grandfather these things.
Right. And it came from a real place. So
exactly.
It had all those levels that real emotions and real situations have.
Exactly.
You know?
So he did this amazing monologue. Then the next day, we had an exercise where you write a play.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, he wrote this phenomenal material. So we were talking to a very successful producer, writer that works in Bogota, and then also a director who was nominated for an Academy Award. The writer created Ugly Betty.
Okay, right.
And so that franchise has gone all around the world.
Sure.
So both very successful people.
Wow.
But we were talking about this kid and his stories, and he also has amazing life experience because he was part of these dispossessed people that had been pushed off their land.
Because sounds like the Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Steinbeck. Yeah.
The war in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, you know, they're not looking for slick actors. They want life.
Gritty, real.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we told about this guy. And that the kid wanted to come to New York Film Academy.
Mm.
And the director says, I'm going to hire this kid just based on what you're telling me.
Wow.
I mean, I auditioned him, but he's now in a 10-part series. He has a great part.
Wow.
And when they auditioned him, they go, this kid is phenomenal.
And where's he been hiding?
Yeah, so these people are out there. People out there that have life experience
great stories
and imagination.
To tell, too. I mean, how many times has a family member of yours told you a story and you're like, that's gold?
Well,
you know,
Nicole told me a story.
Hi, Nicole.
Okay, she works. She told me one story after another. These are both brilliant stories.
She's like, let me get my recorder.
So she's fantastic, right?
Right.
So, that makes my job fun.
Sure.
When I hear somebody tell a story, and I go, I just feel it in my body.
Right.
It's called
It hits you.
Cellular resonance. It resonates on a cellular level.
Right.
When people are coming up with silly stories that I know they just want to have careers.
Right. Yeah.
When people are coming from something truthful that they want to express, it's a whole other level of truth.
I think people know it, and not just casting directors and people who have that professional eye, but I think you can't even fool like a very novice audience because they'll know it, some, whether they know it or not.
They feel it.
On some level, consciously, like, I don't buy this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a conversation. We were at a school today, and this particular teacher was asking me about this idea of, you know, how do you know when a story's good? And I said, you feel it.
Right, there's something. Like movies, we don't have to, like, there are certain movies, you might like them more or less, but they're just, they're good. And
yeah.
All over the world, not in Spain or in the United States.
Yeah.
They've made it everywhere because they've hit on that level, that cellular
resonance.
That cellular resonance, which is not just with one type of people or one nationality, but a global resonance.
Yeah. And yes, you're right. You don't need a casting director. In fact, just a person feels it. And so you know that when a story's operating on that level, it's going to be able to connect to the world.
Right. Right.
Which is what we're trying to do. We're not thinking in grandiose terms.
Right.
We're thinking about a good story and your imagination and connecting.
Sure.
And when you do that, everyone feels it.
Right.
Cursos trimestrales de Vaughan, un curso a su medida con los mejores profesores y el método más eficaz. Clases de 6 alumnos como máximo durante 3 meses en un horario totalmente flexible a elegir entre 1 y 2 clases semanales.
Ahora es el momento. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales 100% método Vaughan. Clases 100% orales en grupos reducidos. Todos los niveles. Así que no pierdas ni un segundo más e infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91133588.
Avon English class is not the same as other English classes. In Avon English class, time is optimized to the max. Every minute counts for your company. Every minute counts for your English. It's all a question of mathematics. The more you practice key structures of the language in every class, the more confident you will be when you use them in real life. And the more effective you will be as a communicator in English. And in this global world of ours, communicating effectively is absolutely key to success. By means of face-to-face classes or video conference classes, Vaughan will make all the difference for your English. And you will make all the difference for your company.
Más información en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid en el 911335831.
Hi there, this is Richard Brown. If you are really serious about improving your English, 2 hours of English class a week is not enough. If you are really serious about improving your verbal agility, 2 hours of English class a week is not enough. If you are really serious about getting rid of all those typical mistakes you've been making your whole life, 2 hours of English class a week is simply not enough. If you're really serious about consolidating your vocabulary, 2 hours of English class a week is not enough. If you're really serious about sounding more natural in how you join words together, 2 hours of English class a week is not enough. If you're really serious about mastering those essential grammatical structures you still make mistakes on, 2 hours of English class a week is definitely not enough. If you're really serious about expressing yourself with confidence, 2 hours of English class a week is not enough. If you are really serious about improving your English, Vaughan Premium is for you. 7.5 hours of class a week
with the best English teachers in the business. Plus, a daytown experience at the end of the 12 to 13 week course, exposing you to a wide variety of accents from around the English speaking world. Vaughan Premium, for people who are serious about improving their English.
Infórmate del curso intensivo Vaughan Premium en el 911335833. ¿Y tú qué has hecho en los tres últimos meses? Si no has hecho nada por tu inglés, ahora es el momento. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales 100% método Vaughan. Clases 100% orales en grupos reducidos. La matrícula ya está abierta para todos los niveles. Así que no pierdas ni un segundo más e infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Lo que más miedo le da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso, Vaughan ha desarrollado sus clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan Telephone Class teacher.
Esta semana en Vaughan estamos celebrando la Semana del Inglés. Siempre hemos querido darte lo mejor de lo mejor para que aprendas inglés disfrutando. Pero es que ahora te lo queremos dar gratis. Gratis.
Hemos preparado un montón de sorpresas, descuentazos, concursos con premios increíbles, talleres gratuitos con tus locutores y autores favoritos y muchas más cosas.
Por eso, durante toda esta semana vamos a sortear cursos y materiales Vaughan valorados en casi 2.000 euros. ¿Qué es lo que tienes que hacer? Muy sencillo.
Entra en grupovaughan.com y descúbrelo.
We're not thinking in grandiose terms.
Right.
We're thinking about a good story and your imagination and connecting.
Sure.
And when you do that, everyone feels it.
Right.
So, for example, I was teaching a class in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Same exercise, tell me something true. And so I had my translator, the person, I told them, do it in your native tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So this one guy was doing a monologue, and I'm listening to it, and something is like, it's like, imagine a radio signal. It's got static.
Right.
So I lean over to the translator. I said, I think he's making this up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling it. Are you? And the translator says, yeah, something's not right. So, again, I can't even, at that point, I can't hear the, it's Russian. I can't.
Right. It's not like you're understanding the context.
But on some human level, I feel it's false.
Right. You're like, I don't know what it is, but it's not
right.
Hitting me. It's not.
So I said to the guy, I said, you're making this up, aren't you? In a kind of a joking way.
Yeah, okay.
And he's like, what? I go, you just made all that up. That's not a story that you lived. And then I see his eyes go down. I go, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I made it up.
Yeah.
I go, we can feel it's false.
See, you don't even need the language. Well, that's just the whole idea behind subtext. I remember when I studied, you know, we would do improvisational exercises.
Right.
We would only use letters of the alphabet, no text.
Right.
And had to communicate, okay, you're leaving. And then the other people in the room would be able to tell us exactly what was happening, even though we didn't say any words,
yeah,
so to speak. It was just reactions, you know,
yeah,
and the tone of those letters. We were using letters of the alphabet.
Yeah.
And it taught me a big lesson that day. I said, people concentrate on the words so
yeah
much. And sometimes there's so much more, especially in drama and writing. The whole key is what's below those words.
Exactly. Yeah. Stella Adler says, it's not the lines, it's the life.
Right.
So the lines are, you know, it's surface
guidance,
yeah,
like to show you where to go a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
We're always sub-communicating, like moment to moment.
Sure, sure. Even when, how you doing? I'm okay.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
I can tell you right there.
Or even when people cover.
Yeah.
How you doing? I'm doing great. Cover. It's like
cover. It's change the subject.
Yeah, something. But I'm saying, you know, there's something else going
right
on.
Right, right.
So that to me is exciting, is to work with writers who, that's the challenge for writing,
mm-hmm,
is to learn how to do that, to have a multiple levels of communication.
Right, right.
And then we have body language. We have facial communication.
Sure.
There's so many things going on that are so complex.
Right, right.
And yet we as human beings at a very young age start picking up on cues.
Right.
And we start seeing things are not as they seem to be.
Sure. Even when our parents maybe are arguing when we're kids, that tone, we don't even know what they're saying, but you're saying, that's not good.
We begin to feel it.
Yeah. And you start to be, you're affected by those sounds.
So the challenge to be a good writer or actor is to start seeing that, the invisible.
Right, right.
You feel
what's not seen, what's not spoken of, literally.
Yeah.
Right.
So when people start writing scripts, they start writing scripts that are inauthentic.
Yeah.
But the journey is to become a truth teller through illusion.
Right, right.
And people start
where the truth is in there, even though maybe the characters have been made up, but there's truth behind that story, and it comes from some place.
Right.
Instead of just, I want to be a successful screenwriter.
That's the sad part is that
a lot of that today, isn't there?
People get caught up in career and they start talking about, you know, and I said, you sound like you're ready to go pick up your tuxedo. Or, why don't you wait before you get your gown?
Right, right, right.
You got some things to do.
And write your second screenplay before you're already celebrating.
Well, we tell people it's 10,000 hours.
Sure, sure.
I'm really honest that way. Mm-hmm. And our mission is to make people better at what they do, but also be realistic.
Sure, sure.
And it doesn't mean you can't sell something along the way. I sold Thrashin as my second script.
Yeah.
But I still needed to work for 10,000 hours before I was now having people calling me up.
Right, right.
And that's the thing that changes is that you get to a certain point where you have the head of a studio or the head of a big agency.
He's got you on speed dial.
They're just calling you up saying, we want to meet you.
Right.
Because people read stuff.
Discuss ideas or whatever.
So I tell people, like, just relax about your agent and your manager.
Yeah.
Focus on the work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Create work that people respond to.
Right.
And again, you might get a couple things made, but you get to the professional level.
You become a better writer. You get to know yourself as a writer, as an actor as well. Then my next question, I guess you've basically answered, but where do you get your inspiration? Obviously from truth, from real situations. Do you ever open up the newspaper? I know some writers look at the newspaper, look at current events. What other places do you look for inspiration when you're writing?
I tell students to shut their phones off.
Okay.
Because this is, for example, a couple of months ago, I was in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I was in São Paulo, and I was doing a two-day workshop. So normally, we don't have people this age, but for some reason, there were two writer actresses. They were both like 14 and 15.
Okay.
And this one girl, she was so funny, and she had this great point of view about life.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to get up and perform a play that she had actually written that day.
Okay.
So I'm getting people to write, whether it's a monologue, you get half an hour.
Yeah.
If it's writing a play, you have about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bring in actors, and you direct them. You're either in it, and you're working with another actor.
Very hands-on.
Completely. Yeah. Or you're directing two actors.
Right.
So she was actually in her play.
Okay. Which isn't easy, too, to perform.
No, it's not. And I brought another actor, and she found this guy. She chose him.
Because
we bring all these people, and then I give them the chance to figure out who they want.
Right. Which is a very important thing, too, who you cast. And
so it's critical.
Sure, yeah.
So she picked this person. So it was time for her to go up.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a full theater. And so she was too small to get on stage.
All right.
You know, it was too high for her. So she just literally rolled onto stage and she stood up like as in one move.
Right, right.
And my jaw dropped because it was so original and funny.
You hadn't seen it, yeah.
I've never seen anyone do this before.
Right.
And so my jaw drops and I turn to the front row and everyone's on phones. I said, you guys missed the magic.
Yeah.
And I said, it was one of the most original entrances I've ever seen.
Right, right.
And they go, what?
A moment that can't be repeated.
The moment's
like that.
Gone.
So, right, yeah.
And I said, you guys missed the magic. This is a metaphor for all of you.
Right.
You're missing the magic.
Sure, sure.
Human beings are so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into a cafe and you're watching a person who wants to be a writer or actor, and they're on a phone and they're swiping, then they're limiting their ability to.
Sure. The world's happening out here. Not
it's not on your phone.
Right, right.
It's going to be right in front of you.
Riding the subway. I mean, in New York, you know, just all the different. And then you can give them your own stories in your head, you know, based on their body language and all this.
Exactly. So that's what I'm telling them. That's one thing is that
Get
where stories come from, they're right in front of you.
Right, right.
But once you start with that kind of consciousness, you're going to start seeing all these amazing things.
Right.
And then also I say, start writing on something, and then you'll start hearing like a voice or a song, or all these things start coming at you.
Right.
And you start comparing them to what you've already put in your story.
Right.
And now you can compare two ideas.
Oh, right, right. Sure,
and
sure.
One idea you might release in this new thing you keep.
Right, right.
Or a name or a song.
Right,
so
right.
So the story starts building itself in your imagination, mm-hmm. but it will only show up if you show up first.
Right. You got to be there and feel, as you said, honestly be there, not
yeah.
kind of faking the funk.
Yeah. Say, you know? And so also the idea that there's all these amazing stories that are they're always around you.
I mean, just New York City, how many millions of stories are happening every day, intertwined, and
right.
I mean, it's
and they're waiting for someone to go, I could tell that story.
Tell that
so,
story, right?
Yeah, that's a huge factor. Is like, yes, reading, plays, watching plays, reading books, mm-hmm. reading articles. It's all of it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Wasn't my next question, but now you're talking about books. Recommend a book, a movie, and a song, since you're somebody who's been in the industry over 25 years, right?
No. It's a little longer.
Are we supposed to date him? We're 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say book, are you referring to a book about screenwriting or about just about life?
I would say maybe a book that maybe changed your life, a song and a movie that, you know, maybe was a turning point for you.
Yeah.
That's a hard question, I know. But you can
this
ask
is where you get people to shut down because they're like going to their heads, right?
Right. Well, this is, you know, yeah. I wanted because we wanted to pick your brain
yeah.
too because now that we've got you here yeah. in Madrid with us.
Well, I would say that for me, the movie that changed my life mm-hmm. when I was a kid was To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
Because it had this idea we attach our emotions to the kids, mm-hmm. right? And then the story becomes much more profound than just Boo Radley.
Okay.
And then it circles back to Boo Radley.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically about kids who are learning about the dark side of life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're learning about something about prejudice.
Right.
And then they realize that that's what they've been doing.
Right. It was a mirror almost of themselves. Yeah.
So a big part of what I'm always trying to teach students is that there's this whole other world that's beneath the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your job to create that. Many times when people are beginning, they just focus on the plot.
Right.
What the character's problem is and what they're trying to achieve.
Super objective.
And that's like a way to hook the viewer.
Right.
And many times you want the audience to want this person to achieve their objective.
Sure.
But then as the story progresses, you begin to realize there's a whole other inner dimension of the story.
Right.
And the character has an inner problem, mm-hmm. a flawed belief about the world, mm-hmm. and that's why we see later on their behavior.
All that stems from something deeper.
Much
than
deeper,
just,
yeah.
Like I always say, the best bad guys ever, and I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, are the ones who don't think they're bad.
Well, yeah, because in real life, people don't.
He's like, I'm doing what I think is right, dominating the world, whatever it is.
Justify it, or they rationalize it,
right.
or that they're the smartest ones.
My revenge for the way I've been treated, but in their mind, they're not bad. They're not, I'm the evil guy, I'm going to screw everybody over.
Yeah. Well, also, right now, I talk about, in stories, you might have like heroes
mm-hmm.
and villains, and I say it's not wise to do that anymore because we have so many much more complex stories. So
sure.
I said, if we move from heroes and villains, do we move to something like anti-heroes? So something like mm-hmm. Silver Linings Playbook,
mm-hmm.
we have two major characters that are anti-heroic.
Right.
And they're sabotaging their own happiness.
Yep.
So there's a dark side to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move from that to something like Breaking Bad, where the major character is a likable guy who becomes a villain.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the most sophisticated level, we have something like Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm.
where we have heroes, anti-heroes, villains, and anti-villains.
Right, right.
People that we think are villains, in fact, like Jaime Lannister,
mm-hmm.
is we realize why he has behaved the way he has,
right.
and we actually like him.
Right.
So, it's very dangerous, I think, for students to stick with heroes and villains.
Right. The classic are those stock characters.
Yeah.
Almost like Commedia dell'arte. Like
you can't do that anymore.
The clown, maybe for a sitcom, but even then, I think sitcoms have become even more multidimensional because people are like, okay, I've already seen that character a million times.
Yeah.
Let's see him now with a Twitch or some kind of extra.
You just need to push. You have to reach the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be a professional.
Right.
And you have to be well-read.
Yep.
You have to know movies. And you need to know about plays and acting.
Sure.
And for people to come in this business and only know pop culture
yeah.
and be completely ignorant when it comes to the great authors, great writers, plays, actors, film history. They're basically just choosing to be children, saying, you're going to die in this business. You're not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's people that are successful in the world of cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love the work they produce. That's my own taste.
Sure.
But if you think about it, if you really want to be a real writer, you have to be a real writer and you have to study real writers.
Right.
And again, acting, I tell everyone, you have to get into an acting class. Yeah. You may not actually act, but you need to watch, as we said earlier, watch how people pick up the text and bring it to life in completely original, different ways.
Sure.
What are the cliches and what are the people who actually, when you see it done well, you're transported completely into the story. Yeah, analyzing
people. That was not somebody acting. That was somebody going through those feelings and experimenting them.
Yeah.
Right? And experiencing
them. And then a lot of actors, are just doing things you can't even imagine. And you'll take the wisdom of that, whatever thing you direct or you write from that point forward, you'll start finding these amazing nuances. So they're teaching you human beings in imaginary circumstances. But they're doing it so well, it's now becomes the truth.
Right.
So that's one thing I really insist on people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, in terms of great books, it's going to be, for me, I'm not talking about fiction now. I'm just talking about...
Yeah, there's no wrong answer to these questions.
You know, there's great books that have been written by a guy named Larry Moss, who was one of my mentors. And so the time I was with him, people like Hilary Swank won 2 Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
He coached Leonardo DiCaprio for all of his movies. So he has an amazing book. So I think for a lot of people out there that want to study writing and acting, that would be a great book to buy.
Okay. So Larry Moss.
Yeah.
Larry Moss. And, let me ask you this, cause you, as I said, you've been in the business for a long time. We don't give years. You've been around the block a few times, produced, directed. What is the project you're most proud of professionally? And then I'm going to ask you personally, I don't want to ask personal questions, but I figured professionally and personally, what are you most proud of?
I think I did Quantum Leap for 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard it's actually here. It's been played here.
Sure.
I was most proud because that each episode we wrote was sort of ours, like a pride of authorship. And we were able to research and make each one like its own little movie.
Right. And that they were kind of their own freestanding.
Yeah.
You know.
So I'm actually working on 2 things right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one is a play and one is a book. And I think those are the best things I've ever written.
All right.
So what's interesting is that I directed a movie a few years ago called Heaven's Rain. And I talked to a guy that was in charge of the soundstage.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying he used to write for Star Trek, but they weren't hiring him anymore, and he was quitting. And I said, these are like he's like almost 60. These could be your prime years. This is like some of your best writing could be right now. Why are you letting those? I didn't say this to him.
But you were thinking.
You're letting these people who are now younger executives determine your destiny. So that's the thing. I think a lot of people, they get these belief systems like an actress can be 30 years old. I'm too old. It's like, well, if you believe that, it's game over.
Yeah, right.
But maybe you have some wisdom and there'll be parts written for you, or write a part or hire someone to write.
And part of writing is experience. I imagine the older you get, and especially if you're living with that, taking notes all the time, and the better you become.
You're getting stories all the time.
Right.
So I would say for people to look at their own lives and see what flawed beliefs do they have about their own ability, their ethnicity, their sexuality. There's so many things people can come up with why I shouldn't do this or why it won't be successful, but you're generalizing now.
Right.
Why can't you be the exception?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I have a lot of people with English with what we do. They're like, oh man, I'm never going to get English. I've been trying, I said, well, I agree with that attitude.
Yeah.
You're never going
to
get it.
Apparently, there's been some research that's come out that said people that go to university in their late 60s are actually at the highest level in terms of students. I don't know if that's true or not, but there's a very knowledgeable guy that deals with centenarians, people that live to 100 years old, and has talked about that these cultural beliefs that are imprinted on us, we actually act them out. We perform according to the beliefs that have been instilled in us.
Right.
So they become self-fulfilling prophecies. But people who live to 100 years old, why are they different? They start analyzing their psychology, their behavior, and it's like they just choose not to live by the cultural scripts.
Right. Let me ask you this too about, do you think being an actor, director, do you think it's helped you with your your personal life as well?
I'm a mess. No, it's had no effect.
No, because like when I know when I was studying acting, I remember sometimes putting my own situation through the what are my tactics, what are my, and it would help me sometimes clear up my own situations or
absolutely, because you start realizing that once you become mindful, you become conscious of your unconscious. You start seeing how like this one character in this one play was self-destructive. How did he do that? He was. You feel like Walter White, he holds grudges.
Right.
Okay. He is unaware of how his childhood wound, which was watching his father die.
Right.
And how he was helpless as a boy to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
He remembers the horror of the hospital.
Right.
The smells and the sounds.
Sure.
Because he's unconscious of a belief he had in from that, which is that he's a powerless person. He can't stop things.
Right.
Because he couldn't save his dad. Then he resented the fact that his girlfriend Gretchen was wealthy and he abandoned her. He left his friendship with Elliot and they started their own business. Walter White has lived his life as an underachiever because he feels powerless and worthless.
Just never enough.
So because of that unconscious, when he gets cancer, he says, I'm going to fight this thing. I'm not going to go gentle into that good night like my father.
Right, right.
And he ends up believing he's doing this for the family after the end of 5.5 seasons. When he tells his wife, but I did this for the family. She's like, no, stop with that family. You did not do this for the family.
Right.
And he has a moment to think about that introspection.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the epiphany. He says, you're right. I did it for the power.
Yeah.
I love the power and I was good at it. So that's a person who was powerless.
And he wanted to fight. That's what was his goal.
He wanted the power. And so his resentment and his brokenness have resulted in the death and murder of many, many people. There's many bodies that are lined up because Walter White was not conscious of his unconscious. So you watch something like that, whether it's a movie or you read something like that, it gives you a chance to not live a tragic life. The reason tragedy exists, the characters don't change or they don't change in time, but you and the audience can.
Right.
So that's where entertainment becomes profound. It's not just entertainment. It's also, you know.
It can move you. It can make you think about the world you live in. Sure. I mean.
If you're awake to it.
Sure. I always try and let movies and plays speak to me. I try to be as open as possible. So maybe I walk out of that theater a better person.
Even something as simple as WALL-E. WALL-E, for example, you could say, well, it's this fun space animation.
Yeah.
But I tell the students, I say, well, WALL-E is also talking about the two most important subjects that are going to face you in this century. The first one is how we are becoming slaves to technology. And this device that people enjoy is now becoming an obsession.
Yeah.
WALL-E is about, you watch it, how the human beings have become robotic.
Yeah.
They're watching screens all the time. And how these two little robots actually become more humane.
Yeah.
And they teach the humans how to be
human again.
Exactly. And so that's profound. It's a secret story. The other thing
Pixar's good at that too, at those double levels where the kids are seeing one movie and the adults are seeing another
That's why it moves us. Mm. And the other thing is that how we have turned Mother Earth into a trash dump, or where that the Earth is melting and we don't want to face it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. No global warming, according to some.
Exactly. It's madness, right? And so those are two important subjects.
Right, sure.
So those exist beneath the surface.
And everybody's thought about them or talked about them at some point.
So you enjoy it, but you begin to feel there's something going on.
Right.
Finally, in terms of what the story's trying to say, the characters have a dilemma. They can either choose to follow their program.
Yep.
Okay. Or a new idea has come along because they've evolved. And we watch WALL-E has evolved over 700 years, but Ava is a super smart robot who evolves right in front of us. But the choice they have to make is, are you going to follow your program or will you follow your heart?
That's the battle we suffer every day.
That's our choice every day. And so story speaks to us. That's why it becomes a story that will live on forever. Because those are lessons we have to face and solve moment to moment, day to day.
And it has to do with our lives. Even though we're telling it with robots and this, we all can identify with that situation. When are we, following our programmed thing? And when are we acting of free will and doing what we really want to do? And not because you have to have this job to pay this mortgage to, okay, that's all reality and that's there. But Really interesting, really. I already asked you about advice to young writers. I said, put the phone down, guys. So put the phone down.
This is something I learned years ago.
Yeah.
When there were no cell phones, I used to actually unplug my phone and I would put it in the other room. Because what I started doing in the beginning, I would calculate how much time I was spending on the phone.
Okay.
Okay. So my brother would call or someone would call and I was writing down the exact number of minutes. Did this for a few days and I looked at that and said, oh my God, I'm losing like 4 hours a day.
4 hours, wow.
Yeah. No, maybe that's not a lot. Maybe 2 hours a day.
Yeah, but still.
But I'm saying that woke me up to the fact if I want to become a professional writer, what do I need to do? Well, the one thing is I need to focus 100%.
Right.
So I unplugged everything. And then every 3 hours, I would plug it back in, see who called me. I'll call them back.
Sure.
Go back to the... Or once in a while, I might find out who called me. I would call them and say, I got 10 minutes.
Right, right.
And
but when you're
so
focused, you decided. But also, well, it happens. A writer, too. You got to lock yourself. Because, sure, part of being a writer, I imagine, is being out there, getting all this inspiration. Another part is locking yourself in focusing and getting it out.
I can go to a cafe. I can write in a cafe. I interact with people. I'm not in total isolation.
Right.
But my phone is not on. I don't even hear buzzing or...
Right.
Vibrating.
Yeah, it's really important when you're writing too, because you got a thought, you got an idea, and you kind of want to get that out. And if somebody interrupts you, you might not get that momentum.
Yeah. Or, if it's a waitress, you can, but you don't have to completely become isolated, but you need to be mindful of when are you wasting time?
Right.
And when are you getting things done?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, this is great. Very, very interesting. Today, from 5 to 7, Paul's going to be giving a storytelling seminar.
Yeah.
And you've given them all around the world. It's put together by the American Embassy, New York Film Academy, the American Space over here. Very, very interesting. And I wanted to teach you. How's your Spanish? I didn't ask you about your Spanish.
Mi español es poquito.
Bueno,
mi abuela es de Chihuahua.
Ah, okay. Pues te voy a enseñar algo en español. I'm going to teach you something in Spanish.
Okay.
That when I moved to Spain and I started auditioning, when I first heard it, I thought, wow, these guys are offensive, but it's not. And what I'm going to teach you is mucha mierda. Have you heard this before? Mucha mierda.
They're all laughing.
They're laughing. Well, you're going to love this one, I think, because you're a guy who loves
stories. I'm afraid to say this. Tell me what's happening.
Well, literally, mucha mierda means a lot of shit or a lot of crap.
Right.
It's how the Spanish say break a leg. And the reason why, there's a funny story behind it, because when a show opened and it was a success, there were a lot of horses and buggies parked outside. And there would be dung all over the place. So here, I remember going into auditions and people saying, mucha mierda. I'm like, this guy's really competitive here. This guy's shit.
Much shit.
And so if you wish somebody in Spain much shit, it is a bit vulgar, but it's how we say break a leg. And
well,
we hope that a lot of horses and buggies show up in front of
I'm hoping tonight at my lecture, there's not mucho mierda. But in your life, I hope for you, mucho mierda.
Mucha mierda. There you go. Thank you so much, Paul Brown. It's been
a
pleasure. Thank you so much, guys. Thanks
Hasta
for tuning
luego.
In. Ciao.
¿Y a ti? ¿Se te hace cuesta arriba el inglés? Clases 100% método Vaughan para todos los niveles que te darán el empujón que necesitas para vencer todas tus dificultades con el idioma.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Esta semana en Vaughan estamos celebrando la Semana del Inglés. Siempre hemos querido darte lo mejor de lo mejor para que aprendas inglés disfrutando. Pero es que ahora te lo queremos dar gratis. Gratis.
Hemos preparado un montón de sorpresas, descuentazos, concursos con premios increíbles, talleres gratuitos con tus locutores y autores favoritos y muchas más cosas.
Por eso, durante toda esta semana vamos a sortear cursos y materiales Vaughan valorados en casi 2.000 euros. ¿Qué es lo que tienes que hacer? Muy sencillo.
Entra en grupovaughan.com y descúbrelo.
¿Cogieron el contrato de la mesa? Sí, lo cogieron.
Did they pick the contract up from the table? Yes, they did.
¿Recogió a su jefe de la estación de autobuses? Sí, lo recogió.
Did he pick his boss up at the bus station? Yes, he did.
¿Cogimos las cajas? No, no las cogimos.
Did we pick the boxes up? No, we didn't.
¿Recogiste a los empleados? No, no los recogí.
Did you pick the employees up? No, I didn't.
¿Cogiste el uniforme de la silla? Sí, lo cogí.
Did you pick the uniform up from the chair? Yes, I did.